You are listening to the F11 Photography Podcast.
Chasers of light, to the purveyors of pictures, to all of you watching and listening from around the world, this is the F11 Photography Podcast. I am your host, Kevin Deal, and this guy over here is your other host, Mr. Brandon Gorey.
How we doing, folks? Welcome back to the F11 Photography Podcast.
Yes, we have had a long absence. Brandon and I both have these things called lives, and we got busy. I got sidetracked doing stuff, and Brandon got sidetracked doing stuff, and while we try to put this pod out every week, it's been like 3 weeks, man.
It's been a long time.
So, yeah. We are going to get caught up, and we're going to record multiple podcasts, and yeah, got to get back on track. But we thank each and every one of you who do watch and listen to this pod. If you watch this pod or you stumble upon this pod and you are on YouTube, we would appreciate it if you could like and subscribe. And for all of you who are listening on Apple, Spotify, and all other major podcast platforms, we thank you as well. And well, we welcome most of you back because most of you came over from there. But if you're new, we would recommend it if you followed along as well and subscribe to the pod. So what have you been up to in the last 3 weeks, Brandon?
Well, the last 3 weeks, I've been doing a lot of work on the personal business. It's called Illfound. We do concrete home decor. And so our biggest trouble, the recent big trouble, is our manufacturers for the silicone molds to make our products. And I'll just give you a little example here. We've got ourselves a nice concrete puck coaster that my coffee's sitting on. And here's another one, proprietary design, made by me and my brother in-house. So we've been trying to move away from Chinese manufacturers for our silicone molds because they can't sign NDAs. So,
because they have to sell your design to somebody else.
Because yeah, if we keep working with Chinese manufacturers, our stuff, which we design and we put a lot of hours into, is going to end up on Temu and Alibaba. So, we finally found a Western manufacturer, and they honor NDAs. So, that's been the big new thing. We've got a couple new ideas coming in.
Have you seen the new, I don't remember the name of the Chinese company that makes electric EVs, EV vehicles, but they basically said, here's our new EV. And it's literally the Porsche, is it called the Taycan, the EV?
Yeah.
It is the exact same car with their label on it. Like, look at this innovative car. I was like, dude, that's the Porsche. Like, I've seen those driving around town. Just to have a little bit of commentary on NDAs in China.
Oh my gosh. There's been a bout of massive complaints for intellectual property infringement on Etsy. So if you're a 3D artist and you're selling posters and files for print on Etsy or anywhere online, China doesn't give a fuck. They can copy that from any website and start selling on other platforms. And there's nothing, like, doesn't matter what lawyer you have, China can do that because they don't honor our laws. So it's a huge problem on the internet. And my brother and I are like, okay, the last thing we want is a really sick proprietary design that's going to generate a lot of sales to just be thrown around by people on China.
Yeah, that's messed up. They do that. And I actually run into that all the time with my YouTube channel. I get contacted by a company in China who the rep's name is magically Bella, because you know there's like a billion people in China with the name Bella, or maybe yeah, zero. they come up with like an American sounding name, like, we have this new like LED panel light that we want you to review, and you end up getting it and it's like, this is just like so and so's, it's just rebranded. And so they couldn't give two fucks less about intellectual property.
Yeah, it's like how many tripods can you get on Amazon that are all the same price, same exact look with just different logos lasered into the aluminum frame. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Well, just food for thought. If you decide to start a company and you do manufacturing, think about NDAs. That's an important thing. So we are going to go to today's sponsor, and then we're going to get into the meat of today's episode. Today's episode is sponsored by Gamut. Are you looking for world-class cinematic video LUTs? Check out Gamut. Whether you're shooting on Sony, Canon, Panasonic, Nikon, DJI, or Blackmagic, their conversion LUTs bring all your footage to the same starting place. That's right, if you're shooting a wedding and one of your cameras is Canon, the other is Nikon, the footage will all end up looking the same. And don't worry, Fuji users, help is on the way. I've actually been in contact with Gamut, and they're telling me that they are working on LUTs for Fuji. They also make creative LUTs that are catered toward weddings, commercials, editorials, and YouTube projects. Gamut now also offers movie barcode generators. Want to create your own movie barcode? Well, now you can by using their entirely free movie code barcode generator. Use that generator to build out palettes and barcodes for your films. Go to gamut.io to check out their insanely generous holiday offerings, and I'll leave a link in the description of this pod.
Hi, I'm Jordan Groby, and you're listening to the F11 Photography Podcast.
All right, so those of you who are longtime listeners of the show, first of all, thank you. And you may remember that back in the fall, late summer of 2023, Brennan and I did a swap episode where he let me use his Nikon Z6, which may very well be the worst example of trying to get somebody to get excited about Nikon mirrorless due to the fact that it has very inferior autofocus. It was so poor they had to make a Z6 Mark II.
Is this an intro to the episode? What are we doing here?
Is this? I'm just giving Brandon shit for his Z6. But thankfully, Brandon decided to get a new camera because he saw that inferiority of the Z6. And what are you going to let me borrow today, Brandon? What am I going to be using?
Today, Kevin, you are using the Nikon Z8.
Ooh, the Z8. Now, I'm excited about using the Nikon Z8 because I'm a Canon R5 user, and there are rumors that the R5 Mark II is going to be announced soon, maybe in the next month or two, and they're going to have to react to this. So I'm excited to see how this camera performs. It's going to give me a little bit of insight as to how maybe Canon is going to address the new R5 Mark II.
Now, sweet. Now what am I using today?
Brandon is excited about using the most in-demand, overhyped camera in the history of cameras, and that is the Fuji X106. So with this guy, I was able to get a hold of one before most people. I don't know if that makes me cool. Probably just makes me lucky, but you can check out my review. I'll put the card up above. You can check out a review. I'll put a link in the description below. But in today's episode, we're gonna shoot street photography and see how we like the camera. So we're gonna show each other how to do some very basic things. I mean, we can't really get the job done without the exposure triangle being explained at the very least. So what can I expect shooting on that Z8?
You can expect really quick focusing, really, really nice tonal ranges, and you can expect a fantastic electronic viewfinder. For street photography, it's really good. The focusing system is fantastic, and the black and white rendering, the monochrome on Nikon is just beautiful. It's quick. You can do all your triangle adjustments with literally with one arm, one hand, and this should fit into your palm and just work for you. It's very, very intuitive.
Well, this camera will make you vote for Bernie Sanders, okay? And it'll make you want to go get a latte, and it'll make you want to use vegan straps, like vegan leather straps, because, that's just how this... Oh, okay, I'm just messing with you, man. So this camera is actually really cool for street. One of the cool things about it is, in addition to having an electronic viewfinder, it also has the optical viewfinder, which allows you to see things in real time, just look through a window, and anticipate stuff
as it goes through the frame. The other thing that's cool about this is that it has the built-in ND filters. So if you're the type of person who wants to freeze your beautiful scene, but maybe blur motion as it goes by, you have built-in ND filters on this. It changes the way you shoot versus other cameras. You don't have to use a ND filter on the front and then have to take it on and off when your lighting changes. You can simply push a button and then four stops of light changes. So we are here in the streets of Austin, and we're gonna do some street photography in this swap episode. All right, so now that you're holding it and you're looking like a stormtrooper that can't hit anything, what are your impressions of holding it?
So light. At first, I almost kind of missed the Z8 already, but it's really, really light. So I think I'm gonna end up enjoying it in about 2 minutes. I just need to adjust.
Awesome, so do you even know how to turn it on?
It's on.
It's on, okay. How do you adjust the exposure triangle, Brandon? Have you figured that out yet?
Well, it looks like it's just a 35mm SLR, so is this your frame rates right here?
That is your shutter speed, and if you pop it up, that's your ISO. So pull that up and then turn the dial.
Yeah.
That's your ISO.
Wow, that's so tactile.
And pop it down in order to do your shutter speed. And your aperture is on the lens.
Right. Okay.
Okay, now.
Oh, I see. Okay, so.
Now, go ahead and put your eye in the viewfinder to take a shot.
Hold up, I'm gonna get down to 2.8.
Do you see an electronic viewfinder?
I see an EVF.
Okay, cool. Now, where your middle finger is, right here, flip it.
Hey.
And now you're in the optical viewfinder. Does that make sense? Now, you see in the optical viewfinder, you can see your settings. All your settings, you can even pull your histogram up on the optical viewfinder, so you can see everything. So, it's just like shooting on an old DSLR.
Dang, that's kind of hard.
It's been a while since you've seen things in real time.
It's honestly so refreshing. Beautiful.
I just stepped in something. I hope it's not what I think it is.
I'm a quick street photographer. As soon as I see something, I have to like lunge at it. I like this one window.
So you saw Brandon shoot his shots on the X106. Here, you can hold it while you talk about it. Tell me your thoughts about shooting on the X106, because you're so used to that whole mirrorless, interchangeable lens type of camera. And this, of course, is a fixed lens, 23mm f2. So it's essentially a 35mm in full frame look at f2, which is not as shallow of a depth of field because it's a APS-C, so it's a little deeper depth of field.
Yep.
But the light transmission is roughly the same.
Well, when you're doing street photography, the depth of field, you don't want it to be shallow unless you're doing very specific stuff. And personally, I don't really care for depth of field shots. I don't care for that like intense foreground focus versus blurry background. I think that's since gone. I think that ended in like the 2010s. Thank goodness, because bokeh is... Who gives a fuck about bokeh? Anyways, now that that's out of my system...
Like a lot of people.
I know.
Like a lot of people watching. Go on.
Oh, the bokeh is so cool. This circles. It's like... If you have to rely on bokeh to make your subject look anything special, then you're not even shooting the subject. You're shooting the background, and that's not in focus. Anyways, I digress. First and foremost, my first impression with this camera was it is not meaty at all. I might just be reiterating what I said in the video. But something that really bugged me is unless you use a preset or B, bake in your own processing settings like contrast, S-curve, etc., or sharpness for that matter, the photo is going to come out incredibly flat.
Well, you're talking about black and white, and that is Akros. Akros, look, I'm a black and white snob, and I've shot Fuji Akros, and I just don't like it because it's so flat. It's just a very boring black and white, and I love Fuji for their color. But when it comes to black and white, like literally the very first thing, like I'll shoot in Akros while I'm out, I'll shoot in RAW.
Yeah.
And like the first thing I do when I get into Capture One is I just start throwing my styles on it to make it look the way I want it to look, because I just don't like Akros. I think it's a boring black and white. It doesn't matter if you do with a red filter,
yeah,
a yellow filter, or a green filter. Akros is just boring. There, I said it.
Yeah, and this is more of this. This is like a frozen meal, this camera, because when I shoot on my Nikon, and of course I have an inherent bias with shooting on, you know, what you shoot on, right? I know what the images are going to look like. I know how I can edit them and how I can approach them. I can see the final product as I'm shooting a very standard color profile. I even have a lot of my color profiles on Nikon flattened just a little bit because I know the color science really well. Color science is like it's my kettle of fish. I love it. It's my cup of tea. With this camera does so much of the lifting for you in camera that it's kind of upsetting. This camera is sort of marketed around the idea that it's got baked in presets, it's got all this color science built into the camera. I know Kevin's got a caveat because he's Kevin and he always has a caveat. But that's the marketing. You shoot this camera for the presets, it does its job incredibly well, especially switching between the viewfinder and the rangefinder, or rather I should say the LCD and the actual rangefinder itself with just the light. And everything.
The hybrid OVF versus the EVF.
Absolutely. I would never use the, the OVF, the non-LCD?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd never use that on this because the lens kind of clips into it and the framing's not exactly right. And it's a slower camera as is. So if I need to take a shot that's unfolding, I need to take that shot. I don't have time to dick around with, oh, it's a more genuine way of shooting versus I need to get this shot because I don't want to wait another 5 minutes, you know?
Okay, so just so I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that it does a lot of lifting for you and you feel like you can't program stuff on your own enough.
No. What I'm saying is I would rather do all the work in the editor where I have full control as opposed to, okay, here's the thing, is when I shoot a photo and it's flat, it's consistent across the board, and I have a control point that I can start with, a base of reference. With this, if I go through a bunch of photos and I'm shooting them in different profiles and different presets and going, oh, I want to do this preset, and say I load them into my computer and I start editing them, I don't want them already processed. It kind of messes with how I want to approach the photos. I'd probably end up changing them all to a base profile in any case, so I had a neutral start. So I got a, you know, frame of reference. Okay, I'm going to do these more of a teal and orange. I do these more of a high contrast black and white. And then these photos, I do just a warm grade all around instead of having to de-engineer and then re-engineer. That's just my comfort zone.
All right, so I do have a counterpoint to that. And it's something that you wouldn't know because you didn't have enough time with the camera to know this.
Okay.
There have the presets built in. You also can, from scratch, create 7 of your own presets, so you could make a flat profile to start with, and when you import it in, it'll import your preset, and it'll give you that flat point. So you can do it.
Is that for RAW?
Or yes.
Is it still for, okay, it's
well,
for RAW.
Okay, for RAW, I think you would just, in Capture One, I think you just do linear curve is kind of the flat response in that.
Okay.
So you would just turn off the film simulations and just go to, like, nothing.
Right. So it's interesting because like they boast like more control over your image with this camera in camera, but for me that's a lot of this lack of control because it's already got me cornered and I have a limited set of parameters in post-production.
See, the reason why I like the camera is because I like to spend as little time in post-production as possible. I like to go, this is what I saw, this is kind of the artistic flair I want to put on it. I want it to import into my RAW editor that way. And so when I get into my RAW editor, I'm like, cool, I just like save myself 90% of my work. I just have to spend 10% of my time tweaking out a little bit of white balance, maybe lifting the shadows a bit because I was trying to preserve maybe some highlights. So I slightly underexposed on purpose. Maybe I pull that exposure up while preserving highlights. That's just kind of my way of doing things. I think the point here is based off of the style you like to do, whether you're a pre or a post type of person, this camera could appeal more or less to you.
Yeah, and that's what I've seen everyone who uses this camera use it the same way, right? It's They don't use it so that they can go in and edit it. You know, they use it so that they can go into the street, and it's a tool. It's an in-house Lightroom in your hand tool that you can take photos with and export. This camera was not built so that you can dick around in an editor. This camera was built so that you can bring the photo to life on location. Clearly. So that you can walk around wherever you're going to be and you can bring your photo to the profile that you want it to be.
They even have the ability to transfer the JPEGs to your phone so you can just upload them.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now, I want to talk about what I loved about this camera. Everything that I truly enjoyed about this camera. Number one is the portability. It's not going to get much more portable than this for what this can accomplish.
Well, that's actually pimped out too. Because everybody tricks their cameras out. This is what you could actually have this camera, just put a cap on.
Yeah.
And you could actually have this camera transport out. Well, I'm missing the ring, but basically right. You could have it transport that small. I got to pick up the ring now.
Right. So you can see this, like compared to the size of my head, my hands are pretty big. Head's small. Here, I'll just let you screw that stuff back on. But what I loved about the camera is how portable it was. What I really liked about the camera is how much fun it was to use. For professional work, for actual street photography that I would want to hang up on my wall, I would not use that camera.
I'd use a Leica. Yeah. I would go buy a Leica if I were a professional street photographer.
Yeah, but it's, I'd use my Nikon Z8 because it's phenomenal. I don't mind the bulkiness and I don't care about being discreet or not. But this camera, what this camera really does well is if you love the process of shooting, if you love the journey and you're not working for the destination, this camera, I think, serves an immense purpose. It captures everything that a photographer loves in terms of the process of shooting. It's a slower camera in that it's not super responsive and the ergonomics are a little bit more pensive, a little bit more patient, which, you know, there's a whole market out there for that. I'm not necessarily one of those guys. I try to shoot quickly. And I like that this camera, like shooting on an SLR, a 35mm SLR, it slowed me down and it made me think about the shots I was taking more. And it let me work with the presets a little bit more. So I did work with the presets. I did alter the black and white. Kevin showed me how to change the contrast in the black and white so that I could actually see the shapes of the shadows I was shooting for. And I think that was so much fun.
Well, so what's interesting about this camera, and Brandon brings up a good point, I think that the marketing, like the people who buy this camera versus the people who I think would benefit the most from this camera aren't compatible. So I'm in some Fuji groups with people who like buy the X106 or are looking to buy the X106. And they're just like, yeah, so should I really get it? Because it has IBIS. What is IBIS? It's like you're about to drop $1,600 on a camera and you don't even know what IBIS is. I'm not saying that to be a condescending asshole, but I am saying that to say that this is a camera for capable hands. Like, this is a camera for photographers, people who know how to use their exposure triangle. If you're an auto person, while Brandon did say that it does some heavy lifting for you, that's the internal processing part of it. The camera part of it, you don't have to be a photographer to use this camera, in my opinion, to take advantage of it, to know, like, oh, when should I go to auto ISO? When should I go to auto shutter speed? You know, like that's how this camera is set up, is you can go into manual or auto modes on the fly between parts of your exposure triangle. And if you know what you're doing, you know, you can do that. And then I programmed my ND filter on there. Sometimes it's like, oh, I'm going from the shade to the sun and I want to very quickly take a picture. I hit a button and boom, four stops of light, gets darker. I'm in the sun. I take my picture.
We shot on a cloudy day, so I didn't really get to use the ND filter. Light was kind of similar across the board. Yeah.
Were you going somewhere with that?
I was trying to think, like, I wish the shutter was a little bit more apparent. So
for the first 10 minutes,
yeah, I was pushing down halfway and I thought it was taking the photos.
Here, let me see if I can.
I can hear that, but it's barely. Like, it's like a paper. Like
no, when I first got this, I was like, I forgot it was a leaf shutter. You know, like yeah. I mean, I knew it was a leaf shutter when I researched it, but I forgot it like the first few seconds I started shooting it. I'm like listening for a clunk of some kind.
Yeah,
and it just wasn't there. I thought it was an electronic shutter, and so that's kind of one of the cool things about this. Now there are advantages of a leaf shutter, especially if you're using flash. You can get a much more controlled look with flash with a leaf shutter versus having a mechanical shutter with the, you know, five or six little parts of the curtain that open up at different times.
So yeah,
having a shutter sync speed and all that. But yeah, I mean, overall, your conclusion was you thought it was a fun experience to shoot on it. You never buy it, and for street photography, you'd probably go with something else.
Pretty much. That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy the process of shooting it.
Yeah. I think that, you know, honestly, I think this should be about a $1,000 camera.
That would make sense to me.
Yeah, it's a $1,600 camera. Now, I needed a street photography / vacation camera, which is why I bought it. Mm-hmm. And I think this is perfect for what I do for street photography and vacation. But I would also make the argument that the majority of the people who buy this camera, this probably isn't even the best camera for them. So this is a good second or third or fourth camera for somebody.
They would probably be better off, and I can't believe I'm saying this, they'd be better off buying a Sony A6000. Or something in that range for what it is. It is just it's a better processor, it's a better sensor, it's a better camera, it's a quicker camera, it's a more professional camera.
Well, and I would make the argument on the Canon side of things, that a Canon R8 has way better autofocus. Then you have the interchangeable lenses. You could use the 28, the 35, the 50, or the 16, and you could have and the lenses are like this big. So you could have an entire street photography multi-lens setup in a little messenger bag along with that R8. So
or the Nikon ZFC for that matter.
Yeah, of course. That was what it was made for. And there's rumors that Canon is coming out with their response to it. So we'll see. But right now, like, you know, everyone's like, well, why did you buy it then? It's like, well, it is a good camera. It's cool. But I could also sell it for a profit right now. I've had it for 2 months.
You know what I've noticed? Hmm. And this is completely tangential. Is it in every movie and every TV show I watch, whenever there's a professional photographer or like, you know, like a detective, anyone using a camera, it's always a Nikon. They're always Nikons.
Well, speaking of Nikon, I'm going to try a Z8 right now.
All right, so I'm holding a Z8 and I opted for the 24-70 f4, which on a day like this means I'm probably going to have to bump up that ISO with an f4 lens, but we'll see. So let's see, turn it on. Okay, that's so far so good. I say that, but hold on. Now it's on. Before taking photos, rotate to the zoom ring. All right, did that.
Beautiful.
Cool, I'm rocking and rolling. I'm on autofocus.
Yep.
Okay, so there's a focus peaking on here. Am I in autofocus or am I in manual focus?
You are in autofocus.
Okay, so to take a picture, I'm at ISO 800 at 1/250th of a second. Okay, I just took a picture. Boom. Now, explain to me with Nikon, red.
Yeah.
So red means that's just your focus box? Is it done turn green when you acquire focus?
So if you press the AF right there, that's your hold the focus. And no, it doesn't turn green.
Weird ass camera system. All right, let's go. Oh, here comes a guy. This will be fun. I'm gonna see if I can do this. Pull this off at an 8. Ooh, with a car. Come on, come on, come on. I got a blurry guy in a frozen scene. That's my style. Yamaha. Wannabe Vespa. Go after these birds. Go! How good are you, Nikon? I heard these are bird. I heard these are bird cameras. Let's find out. It's kind of cool. Move. Move, dude. And then, come on, hearse. Oh, here we go. I'm gonna do this in the viewfinder.
Okay, so we went out and shot. it was my turn, and I used the Z8. Now, I don't get to hold the Z8 like Brandon gets to hold the X106 because we're recording ourselves on the Z8 right now. But I will tell you, as a cannon shooter, holding on to a Nikon is a pretty familiar feeling. The ergonomics are very nice. The button layout is pretty easy to get used to, although the shutter speed and the aperture are backwards. It's kind of like driving in England as an American, or, you know, but that's something that you can get used to, and I'm sure you can reprogram it you want to, because you can reprogram it on Canon. And I really did feel like the Nikon, I could bludgeon someone to death with a Z8 because the build quality on it was fantastic. And the Z8 had these really cool buttons in the upper left, like just extra buttons that were there. So it really felt like the attention to detail. It was very well thought out by Nikon that, like, hey, there's a professional user here who needs to program a bunch of things. We need to put these buttons in the right place. And yeah, they did a fantastic job. Now, the thing that really stood out to me when I compare it to that Z6 that I shot on is the autofocus was like night and day. Like, I still think it's a tick below my R8 and the R5 and the R3 for Canon, but I'm talking just a tick. I'll put it this way. If I go shoot a wedding on an R5 and I shoot 1,000 shots at the wedding, I might miss 2 shots the entire day. On the Nikon, I might miss 4.
Like, it feels like that.
Yeah, so 996 out of 1,000 versus 998 out of 1,000. That was kind of the vibe I got. There were a couple things where I was like, I'm not really sure what the autofocus is doing here, but it settled in. It still got what I needed. And I found that any real issues I had shooting the camera were simply the fact that it just got put in my hands seconds ago. My brain wasn't tuned into where things were and how to react in certain situations with the camera. It was all me, like the issues that I found with it. And, you know, what it told me is, you know, what I tend to preach to people, which is if you are a capable photographer, I could go shoot on a Sony right now. I could go shoot on my Canon right now. I could go shoot on any Fuji right now. I could go shoot on any Nikon right now. And the Z8 definitely proved that to me. Within seconds of putting the Nikon in my hands, I was like, yeah, let's roll. Now, the thing that kind of screwed me up was it turns red on the box when it's locked in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, that totally screws me up because on Canon, when you have a red box, that means that you're missing focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mentality of, you know, it either means that it's having a hard time acquiring focus or I'm within the minimum focusing distance of the lens and it can't acquire focus. So Nikon going red just totally screwed me up. Like, the whole time I was like, am I in focus?
I think that's a programmable thing. And with different focus modes like autofocus, where it'll give you a wide selection, you'll see a bunch of little selective green squares. They'll go green in that instance. But I think that honestly might just be a preference where it just says, like, you know, auto or autofocus indicator, like, turn green. You can just turn that on.
All right. Well, Brandon shot on that 23mm f2 for the X106 because that's literally all you can do unless you get the attachments for the 28 or the 50mm, which, by the way, I ordered the 50mm attachment for it. I hope.
Really?
Yeah, so I found some gray marketplace in Japan that'll do it for about half the price.
Is that about, like, what, 73mm?
No, it's like 50.
Oh, yeah.
It's like going from it's like
well, the APS-C. Like.
I think it presents as a 50, so it's, oh. I think it's more like a 35, and then it goes to a 50.
I gotcha.
I could be wrong. I'm about to find out because it's coming in from Japan. But it you know, your aperture supposedly stays the same and all that, so it's just like a teleconverter. That's all it is. But it's a very well built teleconverter. It's actually like $400, and I found it for like $130.
What?
I found it for like $130 out of a gray marketplace in Japan. So wow. I was like, all right, I'll do that. I'll wait a few more weeks. So
wow.
Anyway,
all right.
To my point, it was an overcast day, as you saw, and I used a 24-70 f/4, which, you know, an f/4 is somewhat bright enough for an overcast day. But there were people jogging by and stuff like that. So it actually did test out the high ISO capabilities of the Z8. And that might have been the thing that stood out to me the most about that camera is how beautiful the color reproduction was and how clean the files were at higher ISOs. I would have to double check the settings, but I was definitely getting into the thousands
on
the ISO.
Okay.
Especially when we get into shaded areas. And I mean, I looked at the files and they look clean. I didn't really feel the need to go in and use any noise reduction software. Of course, I'm probably the worst person to ask that to because I don't care about noise reduction. I actually like grain and noise. I think sometimes photos are too clinically sharp, and I'm actually starting to shift my mentality toward making my photos softer. So doesn't bother me. But I also found that the Nikon did a very beautiful, clean reproduction of files. And I know where Brandon's coming from, what he was talking about with the X100 VI, and how he wants a nice, clean, flat starting, but still desirable looking starting point. The Nikon, right off the bat, the files were very clean, very easy to work with. And I just thought it was a fantastic experience shooting on the Z8. Is there anything you want to tell a viewer who's considering a Z8 that maybe something that they didn't see in the video, something that I didn't discover, maybe to get them kind of pushed over the edge to move toward that Z8?
See, I'm not a techie guy, you know. I need three things in a camera. I need the autofocus to work really damn well.
Which is why I scratched my head over the Z6. Go on.
Yeah. I was making $40,000 a year when I bought the Z6. Okay, let's calm down. What else do I need? I need ergonomics. I need the camera to work in hand. I don't want to think about what I'm shooting. And I need good color. I need good color science. And Nikon is famous for accurate color science. Canon's famous for robust, beautiful color science. And Sony's famous for making every photo look like it was shot in a Sony color science.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, let's bring all of our mids into the blacks and see what happens. Anyways, I'm getting ahead of myself. Like you buy Nikon so because it does the basics, it does just the fundamentals extremely well, and it's also starting to nail some of the cooler stuff, like, you know, like in-body raw shooting and log and stuff like that. You know, all the bells and whistles that like you can market. It does the foundational stuff incredibly well because I love going in post and color grading myself. So that's kind of like the reason I buy Nikon. And like Kevin was saying, is like all the bells and whistles, everything you need to change is no more than one or two buttons away. You need to change the speed, like your shooting speed from single to high. It's literally built on top of the camera. You need to change timers, built on top of the camera. You want to change ISO, everything's built on top of the camera for ISO.
We hope.
Yeah, but all that stuff, you need to change white balance, everything. You've got an assignable menu. Boom, boom, two clicks of a button. So everything that you need is either you can do with a single hand on the camera, you don't need two hands, or if it's something more technical, you use two hands. And that's just incredibly fast for me. So that's kind of what I need out of a Nikon, and that's where it delivers. I don't want to have to go through the menus and go like, oh, this is some cool thing that I'm going to use for one shoot out of 100. No, it just nails all the base things so well so that I don't have to think about it. I can think more creatively.
Yeah, the Z8 definitely got me excited because I think that in the coming months we are going to see an announcement of an R5 Mark II. So as a Canon R5 owner, I'm super excited about that. However, if for some reason Canon decided to just cease to exist tomorrow, I know that with the Z8 I get along just fine. That does it for today's episode. Yeah. We want to thank each and every one of you for watching and listening today. F11pod.com is where you can find us. We never post on social media, but if you want to support us on social media, at F11pod is where you can find us. Please hit that subscribe button below if you could, if you're watching on YouTube. And if you listen to us for the first time on Apple and Spotify, we encourage you to also follow us on those platforms. And until next time, chase light and not algorithms.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. For more information, information about this podcast, go to www.f11pod.com.